Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
We're back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. The last weekend in August, the last weekend before Labor Day. I'm Mike Rags, Chuck Curry coming in here in a couple of seconds, and it's going to be a busy show too during the week. Sean Connery is 90 years old. Not only is Macaulay Culkin 40, but Sean Connery is 90, a true indication that we're all getting older. We're going to run through Connery's career, some of his highlights and lowlights, and kind of a couple of big hiatuses in there, including the last few 10 years where he hasn't done a thing. We'll talk about his career, and a strange one because it's not as many high notes as you would think. In fact, if he didn't have Bond, I wonder how iconic he would be. We'll talk about that, and we also have got some movie news in there too, some Fast Five, and we'll talk about my movie theater opening up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I didn't get a chance to go to it yet, Chuck, but it is open for business. In fact, they have a sneak peek of Tenet on Monday in IMAX, and it sold out. Now, that's relatively speaking.
How many sold out? What capacity?
25%. So there's only so much you can go. Actually, I think it might be 40%. I'm sorry. I think 40? It's 40%.
In Pennsylvania, is 25. Indiana, you're in 40. Okay.
Yeah. So that's a good sign, and we'll talk about that a little bit more because we've got some early Thursday returns for a few movies as well as movie theaters around the country open up. But Chuck, first of all, how you doing?
I'm doing good. We got to bounce right into
the leading movie news I wanted to get to is the biggest movie news we all woke up to this morning was the tragic death of Chadwick Boseman at the age of 42. In fact, he was having, he really didn't have a long career. I didn't know he was sick. I don't know if you knew he was sick.
Yeah, I didn't. Nobody knew that.
He was battling colon cancer for the last few years. In fact, during Black Panther, he was battling this horrific disease. And Chadwick, an interesting actor, very appealing on screen. Chuck, he was kind of your go-to biopic guy. He played Jackie Robinson.
He did really well.
He played James Brown. He played the most recently Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah.
And, and he also played The Express way back early in his career. So he was kind of that guy you went to recapture. And baseball world was in shock. On Jackie Robinson Day, Chuck, the guy who played Jackie Robinson died tragically.
You know, it's interesting. A friend of mine late last night sent me a private message on Facebook saying, did you hear that he passed away? And I initially thought it's one of those fake internet stories, Right. And I Googled it, and I saw all the major outlets reporting it. And I got to tell you, Mike, it's just pretty heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I actually learned through Major League Baseball text alert. And so it shows you how he kind of transcended a couple of genres here. And, Chuck, he's got some really good movies. Obviously, I'm a bigger fan of Black Panther than you are. And he pops up a couple more times as Black Panther
in
the Avengers movies. And most recently, I did enjoy, he was very good in Da Five Bloods, the Spike Lee Netflix film, which came out earlier this year. And he had 21 Bridges come out at the end of last year. But to me, when I first noticed him, Chuck, was back when he was in Draft Day. He came out, he was in 42, and Draft Day came out the very next year. And, of course, he plays the aspiring linebacker that, Kevin Costner wants to draft, doesn't know he's doing. And he's very good in that. It's just cut way too short, Chuck.
It's a bummer.
Some of the great things he's done. And now I guess the question I want to ask you, what does Marvel do?
I was thinking that about an hour ago. I was brainstorming that in my head. I know they were planning on doing a sequel of Black Panther pretty soon. I think they have the script in place. I'm going to say they're going to put it on hold and wait. Ultimately, the role will be probably recasted, but I don't think they're going to jump headfirst into doing that.
That's awful. And he has one movie completed, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which will
Denzel
come out.
Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, I saw an interesting story, too, that Denzel Washington, early in his career, gave Bozeman money for acting classes.
Wow. Okay.
He revealed that on Jimmy Fallon last night, an interesting story. And then he had one in pre-production called Yazuke, playing an African prince that probably won't get done. Do they dare recast it so soon, Chuck?
Well, no, I don't think – my gut feeling is no. I think out of respect, I just can't see them going that route. I think eventually they will, but I don't think it's going to be any time in the next year. I would be really surprised if they recast that quickly.
And
I think they'll pay respect and let this breathe, let people, you know, let it mourn. But boy, oh boy, Mike, it really is a bummer of a story.
Well, you know, I said to my sister, I said, you know, we can walk around 6 feet apart wearing masks and social distancing all we want. You know that crap? Somehow we just throw our arms up to cancer and there's nothing we can do about it. Oh, well, just, you know, millions of people die and it's no big deal. But yet, you know, we have this disease ravaging the country and we're all up in arms. I just, you know, cigarettes are still on the shelves, Chuck. Why aren't they pulling them off if they're so concerned about our health and well-being? It's sad.
Could talk about that for hours, Mike.
Yep, I lost my mom.
I just wanted to point out, moving on, and again, you know, I wish we didn't have to talk about this story because it really is a sad one. In terms of box office, last week Unhinged opened on a little over 1,800 screens, did $4 million in business. At that point, the biggest opening for a release during this COVID pandemic here in the States. Having said that, 1,800 screens, $4 million opening is still really not that good. Now, Friday, it was reported that New Mutants did $3 million alone on Friday. That's going to be the biggest opening weekend. Now, during the pandemic, from what I read, is a $67 million film. Not a lot of advertising going into it. Sort of a what they call a dump from Marvel. I think they acquired it from 20th Century Fox when they bought that studio. So things are getting a little better, but far, far from what they need.
And New Mutants made $750,000 on the night it opened Thursday night. They say 62% of all movie theaters are open at a limited capacity. So 62%.
It's a step in the right direction. New York, Los Angeles. At the theater I'm involved in East Strasburg, Pocono Cinema, we booked New Mutants. See, I'm going to just tell you a couple things. I told you last week, this is some of the crazy stuff that's going on because the studios that release these movies want to get as much money back as they possibly can, right? So Tenet, we have opening on Wednesday, right? So they made a sign at this point, an electronic contract, which through a booker, that's the way it works, an 8-week booking. Normally on a Star Wars movie, it's a 4-week booking.
Yeah.
Now, New Mutants, 5-week booking. That's why some theaters didn't want to get it. Now, I don't know if the studio's actually going to hold the smaller theaters to that. A lot of times they don't. Bill and Ted, Face the Music, 4-week booking, Mike. It's on demand also.
Yeah.
It really puts theaters in a really weird spot. Now, I understand Tenet is a $200 million movie with a fierce marketing campaign is going to be built up anticipation. If there's one film, I think, in the marketplace at this point that's going to get some people back in the theaters, it's going to be Tenet. It's not going to be Bill and Ted. It's not going to be New Mutants. No. It's not going to really be Unhinged. Although, I got to tell you, I love the marketing campaign in week number two for Unhinged. You know, the theaters are open. Get out of the house. Get back to get on the road. Go to the movies. I at least it's a little bit of a, like, let's get back to a little bit normal here. I have to embrace that. You have to, or you'll go crazy.
I also saw some promotional campaigns sparking the fear in people as well, saying this could happen to you, blah, 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 blah. You could become unhinged. So it's also feeding in on the political climate.
Really? Okay.
Now,
another thing, what I read was somebody told me that some of the major reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes is basically orchestrating we really don't want to review some of these movies because it's not safe to go back into a movie theater. So again, you have a dichotomy of some people say, let's start to go back. Some people say, I'm not going to go back until there's a vaccine.
Well, it's interesting, Chuck. There is a Adam Tickets did a polling.
Yeah, okay.
And they said 40% of moviegoers are comfortable returning to the theaters immediately. That's not that high. That's less than half the country ready to go back to theaters. So that's
which is
not
what
a
you would think it would be.
Yeah,
about half. It's always going to be half and half of everything now.
And how big is your movie take going to be when California, New York, New Jersey, Michigan?
Well, here
Arizona.
let me just preface. Tenet opens this upcoming week. In pre-sales, it's been pre-selling more than Dunkirk and more than Interstellar, which both had $50 million opening weekends.
That's now, good.
It's good. I can't see the movie having a $50 million opening weekend simply because no New York City, no Los Angeles. Yeah. I would be shocked. Now, having said that, I think you could have – can you have a $25 million opening weekend? Can you?
I think maybe, yeah. I think $100 million is that new – hump that everyone's going to want to remember. Back in the day, 100 million was the take everybody wanted to get. I think we're back there again if you can get lucky and somehow we'll have a review for that. I'm going to go see it this week too. I'm going to go to the theaters. Chuck, you're obviously already in theaters. And it's
I didn't see the whole thing because I want to give a complete review, but I did watch about a half hour of New Mutants and I felt it just
New Mutants old storyline. Is that
it basically? It felt really small. I know it's a spin-off of X-Men, sort of in a different twist, more horror element to it. It's very self-contained. It felt sort of like I was watching a movie direct to DVD.
Yeah.
What I saw, the footage I saw. I mean, the reviews are not good.
You're not exactly the demo, though, let's say that.
No, but I mean, I wanted to, you know, I do want to embrace something that's watchable. I mean, it was watchable, but nobody's going to get excited over this.
No. But at least it's a modest start, right? I mean, we got to start somewhere.
You got to take what you get.
Yeah.
So let's just say it opens. Unhinged 4 million last weekend opening. New Mutants, let's say it does 7. Tenet obviously going to be a lot bigger. The question is going to be going forward. Does Warner Brothers even consider Wonder Woman 1984? They cut a new trailer last week. We could talk about that. I like trailer number one actually better than trailer
yeah, I do
number
too.
Two. I have to be honest. Even though they showed a lot, the birth of Cheetah, played by Kristen Wiig, who's the film's main villain, and she's the big villain in the comics with Wonder Woman. So a lot to look forward to there. But I just don't see it happening.
Chuck, too, and I know you've been doing it at your movie theater, but my AMC theater showing Jurassic Park, Raiders of the Lost Ark this weekend, Rocky 1 and 2. So they are smart enough to think, you know what, maybe another way to get people back into theaters, show these old movies and maybe
it
draw
only
a
works
little bit.
To us. You know what I did while we booked last weekend? We booked Jaws 1 and 2. I watched Jaws 2 again. Again, we talk about this. It's a really good sequel. And Roy Scheider is awesome in that film. We also booked Scarface, Brian De Palma's Scarface from 1983. I got to tell you, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen watching Al Pacino as Tony Montana back on the big screen. I haven't seen that film theatrically since 1983. And I tell you, it gave me a charge. I really enjoyed watching it on a big screen. I mean, for people, and I talk about this all the time because I've done so many classic revival films at this theater in East Strasbourg, and we do this all the time, obviously not getting the crowds with COVID, but there's something really cool about watching a film that you that has a legacy back on the big screen, and Scarface certainly has a legacy. And I said when I was watching it, like, where is that Al Pacino? Where is that guy? He was so compelling. I mean,
his persona changed dramatically after Senator Woman. He just went over the top.
Hoo-ah, Mike. Hoo-ah, right?
Hoo-ah.
All right.
let's talk about some other movie news. I did see a story where John Carpenter came out and called Halloween Kills, quote, the quintessential slasher film. Now you're getting a rave from the guy who started it all. That's got to be good promotion for the new movie.
He's making some money off it, dude. Listen, we know that they screened this film numerous times in a few test screenings, so we know the buzz is good on it. They delayed it from this October 2020, pushed it all the way to October 2021. They also, Carpenter said in that interview that he's sort of talking to Blumhouse, which has revived Halloween here, about doing a remake of his thing from 1982.
Yeah, well, it wasn't too long ago they already did that. I mean,
they sort of did That was sort of like a, what was it, like a prequel, right? A prequel with the Norwegians, with one of your favorite actresses, right?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead,
Yeah, I mean, that was a very watchable movie, but, you know, the effects were impractical. They did CGI. Some people had an issue with that. Listen, I couldn't, and I just watched a thing a few weeks ago on the big stream. We did that movie, great and movie. Yeah, it's a great movie. And it's funny because I was reading about the thing when it came out in 1982, how... So remember the magazine Cinefantastique?
Yeah.
Which was a big genre magazine. They did a cover story. Is this the most hated movie ever? I mean, it was not well received when it came out in 82. It was the same year as E.T. For whatever reason, people were inclined to it. And over time, it has grown in appreciation. And many people consider it maybe Carpenter's best movie with Halloween and a classic. And it's a terrific film. I could embrace a remake if Blumhouse does it. I could.
Yeah, and you know, let's take what John Carpenter says as well with, you know, a little grain of salt. He is a producer of this movie. And remember how much James Cameron loved the reboot and continuation. Was that Terminator Genesis? Didn't he endorse that completely?
Yeah, he did.
And
he
that
did.
Movie was awful.
Well, no, I liked it. No, I actually liked it.
No,
but I get, listen, a strong endorsement after one and two, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
I did see another interview. Believe it or not, It Follows is 5 years old already.
Wow.
Micah Monroe, little thriller horror movie that a lot of people got a chance to see, and it's really good. If you haven't seen It Follows, it's good. And she actually talked about the potential of maybe doing a sequel to that film, Chuck. I still don't know how many eyes that movie actually got to see that movie, but it's really good. It's really creepy. I'm not sure if it warrants a sequel, but there's an actress that needs to work more because I do like her.
Yeah, I like the film. I didn't love that. I like the film enough. I don't know if there'll be, you know, major calling. Let's do a sequel. I do want to talk about one thing. I don't think we touched on it last week, but Warner Brothers released a trailer to Matt Reeves' The Batman, Robert Pattinson.
Yes.
Your thoughts first. Go ahead.
Well, I think I texted you. It's easy. Sum it up in one sentence.
Go ahead.
It looks like a boy is playing a man's role. That's the best way I can put it.
I got to tell you, I watched that trailer now about 30 times. I like that trailer.
You do?
That was a good trailer. Yeah, I liked it. I found it tremendously intriguing. I liked the tone of it. I get not everybody's going to buy Pattinson as the Batman Bruce Wayne, but let's just say I accept it.
I think we will see Pattinson.
It looks like Batman meets Seven, David Fincher's Seven.
It
felt like that. The Riddler definitely feels like a mass murderer. You don't see Paul Dano. He's playing the Riddler. He's in garb. His face is covered. What Colin Farrell's Penguin, complete prosthetics. Looks like a Dick Tracy movie, what they did to him. Zoe Kravitz is Catwoman. This is all before these characters really have formed into the Gotham City universe. Batman is in year two. I found it intriguing. And then when Batman beats the heck out of that guy, he really beats the heck out of that character. Pretty intense stuff. 100 million people watch that trailer on the internet, Mike. It's a lot of people.
It's impressive. It definitely feels like it's in the Joker world. There's no doubt about it.
It does. And like, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think eventually we are going to see River Phoenix versus Robert Pattinson.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix. It'd be more interesting if River Phoenix did it.
I got that same feel.
Yeah.
I think that fit into the same universe.
It would be hard for them not to do that. Let's just say that. And one more note I wanted to bring up. Duffer Brothers did confirm that season 4 of Stranger Things will not be the end, Chuck. And I bring this up of note because my daughter finally watched season 1. We watched it this past week together. And boy, oh boy, it is a reminder of how good season 1 was. Now, season 3 is one of the best things Netflix ever has done. But season 1, getting back to the basics, it's a great miniseries. It's a great series overall. And I'm really looking forward to the fact that they said that the pandemic slowed things down. Mm-hmm. But they know how it's going to end. And season 4 will not end it. So it's got 30 Emmy nominations last year, Chuck. That's how good season 3 was.
Pretty impressive.
Great stuff there.
What about Cobra?
You don't stream anything or watch anything on TV, so I don't even know why I brought it up.
What about Cobra Kai season 3? Netflix acquired the rights, but they're not going to air it until 2021. They're currently airing Cobra Kai season 1 and 2, which is going to give that really terrific, terrific show, spin-off of The Karate Kid, or, well, sequelized Karate Kid many years later.
Yeah, you watch it and you almost
broader
wish.
Broader audience. It's going to give it a broader audience.
You watch it and you almost wish Pat Morita were still alive.
Yeah, you know, of course. But I think if you look at the strategy of Cobra Kai Season 3, I think what they're doing here, they're gonna get a lot of eyeballs on Season 1 and 2. They're going to create an anticipation.
Smart.
And I think it's a smart move. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to see it. I know people, you know, oh, man, they're bummed. Listen, 1 and 2, I thought were pretty awesome stuff. If you like The Karate Kid, and who doesn't love The Karate Kid from 84? And the first sequel I thought was really good.
I think those
have done a fantastic job with that, just the
property.
Universe of it. Really
I
nice.
Think the problem with it is, not that there's just a problem, if it would have been released during the pandemic, it would have been phenomenal. People would have really, really taken to it. And YouTube Red, I mean, if it would have released on a wider streaming service that people all – like if it came out on Netflix to start, I think the buzz for it would have been a lot higher.
Oh, heck yeah.
But nonetheless
– But it's respected, there. Though. Yeah. It is respected.
It is. And a lot of people are looking forward to it. And now a new audience can see it on Netflix in its entirety. So that's a good thing. Chuck, you touched on the movies coming out this weekend. And again, The New Mutants and Bill and Ted, which really isn't coming out because AMC is not getting it. And it's only going to be streaming pretty much in some theaters as well.
We booked it.
Yeah. And then you've got really Tenet is the big one. And that'll be Monday. So we look forward to see what happens. Hey, by the way, is Mulan getting any theatrical release whatsoever or no?
Not in the U.S. It is. Wow. It is internationally. But not in the U.S.
I still can't drop $29, and I can't believe people are going to drop $19 for Bill and Ted. I can't fathom that, Chuck. I can't. But I'm sure. I know a buddy of mine. He's seen it. He liked it. He bought it. He streamed it.
All right.
I don't know. $20 is a lot of money. We've talked about that quite a lot. We're gonna talk about Sean Connery's career here in a bit. He's 90. I still can't believe that. But we've got to do Fast Five as well, Chuck, where I say an actor or actress, you say the first role that comes to mind. And I know one of your favorite actors of all time, and I'd be surprised if you didn't say Summersby, but Richard Gere, believe it or not, is 71 years old.
I'm a fan. Listen, I got to go. I'm a big fan of Summersby, which you know. We watched that on Laserdisc many years ago.
Yeah, many
years ago. I saw that in the theater a few times, Jodie Foster and him. I like that storyline. I think he's just so appealing. Officer and Gentleman, Mike.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Two movies for me, and I'm not a fan.
They don't make movies like An Officer and a Gentleman anymore, right? They just don't.
They don't. Two movies for me, and I'm not a fan of Richard Gere in the least, but Primal Fear.
No, really.
I'm not. I love Primal Fear. And I love the Mothman prophecies. I really thought that they were too.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Let's just say hypothetically, in an alternative universe, he was one of the actors up for John McClane in Die Hard in 1988. How would that have turned out?
I can't see it. Does that mean that he'd be starring in Hard Kill opposite Jesse Metcalf now?
Probably.
Oh, by the way, I did watch a Bruce Willis movie over the weekend, over the last week. Co-starring with Nikki Whelan in Trauma Center, Chuck.
Yeah, how much screen time he gets?
Oh, well, he's in it more than you'd think. He actually, it almost seems like he's trying in this one, but it's terrible. It's her movie, and he just floats around in the background picking up rent money left and right. Chuck, how about Cameron Diaz, who is 48 years old this weekend? Of course, jumped on the scene in The Mask. Did she ever come close to getting that kind of there's something about Mary is the quintessential role for me.
Yes, it was for her too. Listen, she, as female leads go, she had a terrific career. She made a lot of money. The industry paid her a ton of money. She was getting $20-25 million for some of these films, including Bad Teacher. She made big money. She made big money. And I don't think she ever looked better than The Mask. She looked great. I remember watching that and said, wow. She's got it. She's going to be a star. She became a big name in the business.
She did. 22 years old, and she was good as the lead Charlie in Charlie's
she
Angels.
She was, absolutely.
She was good in that. Yep. She's an interesting actress too, Chuck. She's kind of had two different careers as well.
On Any Given Sunday is a pretty good performance.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How about Rebecca De Mornay? She is going to turn 61 this weekend. again, early, really jumped on the scene with Risky Business, and then had a second career in a movie that I liked a lot with The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
That was a huge hit. That was one of those touchstone 90 Disney movies that was a huge hit with Annabella Sciorra. She did a movie called Runaway Train with John Voight and Eric Roberts that early has a following. But Risky Business made her a star. It certainly made her a name.
Most recently, she co-starred in I Am Wrath with John Travolta. She had her mortgage was due
as well. That was a pretty decent streaming film, though, no?
It could be his worst to pay. Let's say that.
Oh, but it was a decent watch.
You cannot watch a Travolta movie with a raccoon on his head and not ignore it for 2 hours. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right.
Didn't you like that movie Mother's Day with her in it?
I did.
Yeah. One of my favorite actresses, and she can't seem to get out of co-starring with The Rock in a lot of movies, and I've loved her since basically back in Carlito's Way. But how about Carla Gugino is 49 years old this weekend, Chuck. To me,
pretty good run.
She's had a good run. Never superstardom, but very recognizable. Never,
listen, if you show people who is this, they go, "Wow, I seen her. I know her." They're not going to know her name. Most people.
No, they'll know she was in a few Rock movies.
Absolutely, and I thought she was really fun. I'm a big fan of San Andreas. It's a very enjoyable genre movie for me.
I actually liked her, and people forget in that short series it was on Karen Sisko, based on the Out of Sight, out of that character.
Yeah,
and she's co-stars really good. On that show.
She's really good.
Yeah, solid, Robert Foster's her dad.
Yeah,
She's really good in that. Probably didn't reach the stardom she should have, Chuck, because she's really good.
Still,
she's
not just solid. It's a solid career.
Another solid career and a long one at that. How about Elliot Gould, Chuck? How old do you think Elliot Gould is?
83.
He's 82 years old this weekend, and he's got a. You know, we talk about this with Walter Matthau a lot, but in the 70s, when you'd cast Elliot Gould, there's nobody like Elliot Gould now. But this guy was starring in major movies.
Yes, he was.
Getting his name above the title. I mean, let's face it, Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland are not the most handsome men in the world, Chuck. And these guys were leading men, no doubt.
They were.
What do you think of Elliot Gould? Breed?
Well, I mean, he recently did a turn on Ray Donovan on Showtime. I like his work on that show. You got to throw out some names.
Initially, I think MASH, right? I mean,
yeah.
And I loved him in
MASH the movie.
Yeah, MASH the movie.
Yeah.
I loved him in Capricorn 1. He's one of many that star in that movie as well. He did some good stuff early on. He did Bob, Ted, Carol, and Alice, whatever, all those. Yeah. That was a great movie, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's one of the 11 of the Ocean's 11.
Sure.
And only in the 70s do you get a movie like Escape to Athena, Chuck, with
his career spanned six decades. Good.
I remember seeing Escape to Athena and seeing Sonny Bono's name in the credits, Chuck, and thinking, they've kind of just scraped everybody, and everybody is in this movie. Of course, one of those mercenary action movies of the late 70s that were in style after Guns of Navarone, I suppose. But that's a good career. But
it is.
A really interesting career, Chuck, is Sean Connery, who turns 90 years old. He hasn't worked as much as people may think. But he's worked a very, very long time. He's nominated, actually won an Academy Award, obviously, for The Untouchables. He got nominated for a Golden Globe for his turn in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade as a supporting actor. And it's Dr. No first. There's nothing before that for me, Chuck, that pops up on his bio. That makes me think I saw that movie. I know what he's doing. I know how
great
he is.
But listen, he played an iconic character, one of the great iconic characters of all time. Many people, or most people, feel he's the greatest James Bond ever. And the guy was super cool. It's interesting because I did a revival 2 years ago, Goldfinger.
Right.
And I'm watching on the big screen. Now, I grew up, as I told you, my first entry theatrically to James Bond was Live and Let Die in 1973, right? So Roger Moore became my James Bond. That's the James Bond I knew. But people always said Sean Connery's the greatest 007 of all time. So I'm watching Goldfinger, and he's really damn good.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, this material ain't surviving the Me Too movement, though.
No.
It's not. It is. Holy smoke. I mean.
Well, I mean, could they have a character named Pussy Galore nowadays?
No, probably not. But the sexism of the way he played 007. I mean, it fit the time, though. I mean, it is. It is what it is. I mean, you can't change what was, right? You can't go back. You can only go forward. Right?
Although some people certainly do try, Chuck.
But he still was a great James. He's a great, great James Bond. He's
Talk about that for a second. Dr. No was 62.
And his screen presence is amazing.
It's incredible. It really is. From Russia with Love the next year. Then he would do Goldfinger the very next year. You Only Live Twice in 67. Thunderball before that. And then he would wait a little bit longer to do the next one, Diamonds Are Forever in 71, which I like that one. It takes place in Vegas. To me, it's Diamonds Are Forever, Dr. No, and Goldfinger, if I'm going to do quintessential Bond movies with Sean Connery in it. And then he would come back and do it one more time in a non-Broccoli-produced James Bond movie. He would do Never Say Never Again. A lot of controversy around it.
Well, he was born in 1930, so how old was he when he did Never Say Never?
53 years old.
Okay, he toupee...
Yeah,
well, he had a toupee a long time, though.
But to say the least, that's very watchable. By the way, that movie's not.
Of course, it is.
Kim Basinger is the Bond girl in it as well. But it was weird how him and Broccoli couldn't get along. Then Bond always has controversy. You know, every actor always has a problem with being James Bond sooner or later.
True.
Well, in between all that, Chuck, he would do a movie. A lot of movies, let's face it, not big blockbuster movies. I'll run through some here if anything tops your list. The Anderson Tapes comes out. He does a movie called Zardoz, which was an odd science fiction type film as well by John Borman. The Terrorists would also come out in 1974, where he would co-star with Ian McShane, of all people, about, you guessed the terrorists. Again, a mostly overseas movie that would get released here. The big one for him in 74 was the all-star cast that got redone recently, Murder on the Orient Express. Chuck, he's part of that cast with Sidney Lumet directing and Albert Finney as Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
And maybe my brain is escaping me, but I think Sean Connery is very good in this film. I haven't seen
him. He's very good in that movie.
I haven't seen it in a really long
time. And that was a hit.
Yeah, hit. Lauren Bacall, Jacqueline Bisset, Ingrid Bergman's in that as well. After that, he would do The Man Who Would Be King, which was a big hit as well.
It was.
Co-starring with his buddy Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, yep.
Good movie. Very good movie. He'd actually star as Robin Hood, Chuck. Do you remember who played his Marion to Robin Hood?
No.
Iconic actress.
Who?
Audrey Hepburn.
Okay, how cool.
And then this is 1976, by the way. Another all-star cast, Chuck. And I remember seeing A Bridge Too Far because I loved Robert Redford. I was 7 years old, saw this thing, and I had to see everything Robert Redford was in. So I sat through 2.5 hours of A Bridge Too Far before Robert Redford even pops up. But watching that today, look, Hackman's in it, Connery's in it.
That's when they made one of those movies like actors come and go, and they're like, I guess it was cheaper to hire talent back then. You didn't have to pay him huge, huge money, and they had big ensemble casts. Those are always novelty films. They're very interesting watching now.
They are, and they usually breeze through the long running time, too, because of all – there seems to be 5 storylines running when all-star cast going at the same time. After that, in 1978, a Michael Crichton-directed movie, The Great Train Robbery, Chuck, which he co-stars with Donald Sutherland, another minor hit for him. Then he would jump into the – and I know we're going to have a conversation here.
Yes.
He would jump into the disaster movie genre. Yeah. In 1979's Meteor, which actually stars Natalie Wood, of all people, trying to get her career jump-started again, directed by Ronald Meamy. So no slouch to the genre, Chuck. Your buddy Carl Malden's in it. Brian Keith as a Russian premier. Martin Landau, Henry Fonda, of course, because Henry Fonda always has to have a cameo in these films. What went wrong with Meteor, Chuck? Because this
a lot.
Is one-
it wasn't the cast. I mean, he's good. Natalie Wood is good. That's not the issue. And listen, he's just he's a great screen presence. Again, it's really weird because Ronald Neame directed as good a disaster movie as any, The Poseidon Adventure. And he directed a movie called The Prime of Miss Jean Brody. He brought a nice subtle touch with characterization to The Poseidon Adventure, which elevated that movie to the highest levels in that genre. It's an absolute, it's my favorite film, you know. It's in one of your favorites. It's an absolute classic film. It's fascinating when a director, you say, okay, how could he go so wrong with the material? And he just goes so wrong. It's cheesy. It's silly. It has a thud for an ending. It has one big set piece at the end where they're all covered in mud, right there.
I think that's part of the problem too, Chuck, is, you know, you sit back and you watch Deep Impact and Armageddon, and they're both, you know, very good movies, and one really good in Deep Impact. And then you go back and watch this movie. The special effects in this movie are, I mean, they're just awful. It is awful. And none of the actors can overcome that. And it doesn't have that schlock appeal of a true genre movie of disaster movie.
Well, we've talked about this ad nauseum, the disaster genre, how popular it was, how it did a quick fade. And in a lot of ways, deservingly so, because Meteor, and you had, remember a movie called City on Fire?
Yep.
That was a Canadian production. Shelley Winters had a small part in that. And
then, of course,
Barry Allen was pretty good. And When Time Ran Out and Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. And, you know, in this, when you make disaster movies that are cheesy and hokey and they're not good, you know, you burn the genre out. And then you had something so good with the Poseidon Adventure and the Towering Inferno and Earthquake, which were legitimate, massive box office attractions that people loved.
And again,
they loved the early stuff. Even Airport 77 is a really good movie with Jack Lemmon. It's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
But 79, not.
Is awful.
Yeah, is not.
The Concorde is horrendous. And it's interesting because now we could go into a brief conversation that I find interesting. You have stuff went on back then that would never happen now. It would never happen, Mike, because the studio heads are too smart now. Warner Brothers would never sell the rights to Superman to Canon.
Yeah,
right?
Properties, yeah.
And Universal, what they did with Jaws 3 and 4, these movies stink.
Yeah.
They stink. Yeah. When I went to a movie theater watching Jaws 3 and 4, there was actually a sign at the box office in Brooklyn, New York, no refunds. That's true. People were like, what is this garbage? I want my money back.
Well,
I mean, they ruined properties into ridiculousness.
Well, look, George Kennedy is hanging out of a window at 35,000 feet, firing a gun at a missile. I mean,
it's so bad. And then one character falls through the floor in the plane, and he's hanging there by his waist. Like, what is this?
But look, Jimmy Walker is in it. So, you know, Dynamite, right?
Dynamite.
Cuba came out in 1979, Chuck. Nothing great. It's interesting. He's just as great as Sean Connery as you think some of these roles would be iconic. I did like this next movie in 1981, a retelling of High Noon in Outer Space, Peter Hyams' Outland. Chuck.
That's a good movie, Mike.
Yeah,
that movie put Connery back on a respectability in terms of genre movie making. That movie was embraced. It's sort of a reworking of High Noon with Gary Cooper, set in outer space, very well received, and it does have somewhat of a legacy now.
He would still be struggling along here. Time Bandits, he makes a cameo in that movie, which is a very funny movie, good genre movie. Another one I liked, probably not a lot of people saw it, but he plays Wrong is Right. He plays opposite Robert Conrad and Catherine Ross in that movie about a TV reporter in the middle of a Arab crisis that could lead to World War III, a dark comedy. Again, he does the Never Say Never Again. It's only till 1986 that younger audiences start realizing they want to see Sean Connery in movies when he co-stars with Christopher Lambert, of all people, in Highlander, Chuck.
He's 56 years old, right? Born in 30, right? 56, right?
1986 comes out. Russell Mulcahy is your director, Christopher Lambert, kind of a genre-crossing movie.
And that movie's very well-respected, very well-respected.
This movie's so well-respected, they decided to make a straight sci-fi film out of it, Highlander 2, which some say, Chuck, is the worst movie ever made.
It's not good.
Highlander 2, The Quickening, by the way, if you're wondering what the
I know.
Right after that, though, he does a very respectable job in 1986 is The Name of the Rose, kind of a murder mystery in the Dark Ages, Chuck. It's based on the book by Umberto Eco, which is, by the way, Christian Slater, very young in that, has a co-star.
Yeah, and then, I remember that.
If it's not Bond, it's Jim Malone that he's known for. The Untouchables comes out in 1987, and the rest, they say, is history. His second career starts there.
Absolutely. His second career starts there. That is a unbelievably great movie, directed by Brian De Palma. That movie goes down in that genre to me like a Godfather.
Yeah.
Like it's a great movie. It's a perfect film. Kevin Costner is perfectly cast. Andy Garcia is awesome, but Sean Connery gives the juice. He is every minute he's on screen, you're just all in.
I'm in.
So good. He's so good in that movie.
I remember seeing it, thinking this is his
classic,
Oscar
man.
Role.
Classic character, classic movie.
Classic lines.
His death scene is classic.
His death scene's classic. He's got the great lines as bringing a knife to a gunfight.
What are you prepared to do?
Yep. You send one of theirs to the hospital. We send one of theirs to the morgue.
Oh, unbelievable.
And, you know, this is interesting. It makes Robert De Niro's Al Capone almost forgettable in this film. You just forget because of the screen presence that he has.
I agree.
Jim Malone. It's quite incredible. You don't want him to die in that movie. It's just really good. And I'm actually a fan of the movie. He started cashing in and starting, you know, to work a lot more.
Yeah, he's cashing in now.
I like The Presidio opposite Mark Harmon.
Yeah, I remember that.
Plays a general in San Francisco. He and Mark Harmon try to solve a murder.
Yeah. It's almost like he was reborn.
Yeah, but it's really a procedure.
I get it.
It's nothing great, but I liked it. For some reason, he's in it. It works. And then, of course, he turns into another iconic character. Who else could play Indiana Jones's dad, although he's about 10 years older than Harrison Ford, but he's in The Last Crusade, and I thought it was perfect timing, perfect casting,
okay,
and a great screen team.
A lot to talk about here, and I like it. I like the film. I like him in it. But I got to harken back to when I sat in the theater watching it. I was a little taken back how he played completely against type. You had any issue with that?
No.
Not that his performance is not good. He's good.
No.
The movie's good. I just thought, okay, here you got Sean Connery. He's going to be kicking some ass, and then you get something very different.
I had no problem with that. In fact, it never crossed my mind at all.
Okay. I got to be honest.
He doesn't really – you're right.
He's fun in the movie.
He's very fun in the movie, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a classic.
And then you learn in that movie Indiana Jones' real first name.
Yeah. And he's named after the dog, by the way.
Henry.
He's Henry. He's Junior.
Yes.
Another movie that big casting, family business with him and Dustin Hoffman and Matthew Broderick about high-tech company and a grandpa and three generations trying to steal some money, Chuck, didn't make a dent at the box office, considering the great casting. But one that did right after that, and I'm not sure you're a big fan of it, but I am, read the book, loved him as Marco Aramius in The Hunt for Red October, a big, huge movie for Connery.
I when I watched that first time in a theater, that was the widest screen movie I ever saw. I remember it was like they scoped the screen out super wide. I know people love it. I don't dislike it. It just sort of like I found it. There's not much action in it. It's very talky. He's great in it, though.
Love it. Love it.
I know I'm in the vast minority that, you know, it's all right, but. And McTiernan is one of the great genre directors ever of all time. Die Hard, Predator, Hunt for Red October. I get it.
That same year, he stays in Russia.
And he's certainly compelling on screen, man.
There's no doubt
Super
about it.
Super compelling.
He co-stars with Michelle Pfeiffer in The Russia House in 1990, which was a mild hit. Kind of an espionage film based on a John le Carré book. Nothing great, but a good movie. I loved his cameo in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, by the way, too, as King Richard at the end of the Kevin Costner movie. Did not expect that, and he does pop up at the very end of the film, and he was a huge endorser of Kevin Costner for that movie. He thought that a lot of the slack that which Kevin Costner got for casting in that movie, was wrong. And he pops up. I thought that was very nice touch of class to have him as King Richard. Who else could play King Richard than Sean Connery? Interesting to see what you think about 1992's The Medicine Man. This is really one where no big concept, no big novel it's based out of. It's just a Sean Connery movie in the Amazon.
Oh, okay, here's what's interesting about that film. Lorraine Bracco is coming off Goodfellas, right?
Yep.
And so she got the female lead, and I remember the reviews, how people felt she was tremendously miscast and their chemistry was not good. I don't know if they got along very well on set. I think that's what I read. Interesting studio project, though.
Yeah, and it didn't really make much money at the box office for him either, though. The next movie did. He got paired up with Wesley Snipes in the Michael Crichton-based Rising Sun. Again, I think this movie is overpraised. I think it's good, not great. He's very good in it.
The story kind of gets
bogged down a little bit too much. But it's good casting, I guess, to see these two actors against each other.
But, you know, it's interesting. This is a time in Connery's life when he's on screen. Very few actors in the history of film ever matched his star presence. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, look at the differences. Early in his career, he's doing the James Bond movie. That's how American audiences know him. Yeah. And now later in his career, in his golden years, he's the star of all these movies that are
And he
big.
Looks great. He looks great, though.
He looks great.
In his 60s, the guy looked amazing.
Yeah, and he takes his toupee off for the movie Just Cause, based on the Jets' John Katzenbach book. Co-stars Lawrence Fishburne and Kate Capshaw. He plays a professor, lured back in the courtroom, based on a murder. Interesting note in this, his daughter. Do you remember who plays his daughter in this movie?
I don't.
The one and only Scarlett Johansson.
Okay.
So, again, it's pretty paint-by-numbers script.
She was young, I take it.
Yeah. I
remember her. I think the first thing I saw Scarlett Johansson in was Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
If you remember, just
Carrie Ware from MTV. I liked her.
Just Cause. We're talking about Sean Connery. Nobody
I know,
cares
but you see
Carrie
how
Wirth.
We interject everything.
Nobody
the show.
Cares about Carrie Ware.
That's what makes the show interesting.
When she turns 90, we'll do that show.
All
okay?
right, fair. If it pops in my head, I say it, but go ahead.
By the way, Just Cause, known as well, Ed Harris is in that movie. They would team up.
Yeah.
Just a couple of years, Chuck, once again. Now, first night, Richard Gere, we brought him up. Again, Sean Connery plays King Arthur here.
Yeah, I remember
Chuck.
Seeing that in the theater.
Julia Ormond.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah, Knights of the Round Table movie. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
I
he
get
plays
it.
The voice of Dragonheart. Remember the Dennis Quaid big
sure.
budget dragon movie? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he plays John Patrick Mason in The Rock and one of the best action movies ever made. One of the most perfect casting ever done with him and Nick Cage.
If you start with Die Hard as the greatest pure action movie of all time, The Rock's pretty close, no?
It is. I would say it might be the best summer action movie I've ever seen for some reason. I think of the summer when I see that. And then, you know, the character he plays, too, is very interesting, Chuck, because it's kind of wrapped in mystery. You almost feel like he's almost James Bondish in this, too. So if you really
and he's
want
got
to,
a sarcasm that's yeah. so infectious.
Yep.
He's got an attitude that's so infectious. The way he plays and the way Nicolas Cage plays off him is beautiful. Their chemistry could not be better. Connery looked amazing.
His action scenes are very believable, too.
He's just believable. That is a, you know, people who knock, and a lot, there's a lot of naysayers and a lot of people who knock Michael, Michael Bay.
Well, this is pinnacle Michael Bay.
They knock him. You know, this is his best movie. This is his best movie. And it's so damn entertaining. And then when Connery comes back to save Nicolas Cage and he says, and I mean, how good is that stuff?
It's just great. And then the Irish guy trying to fight him too. I just love
it. It's a good script. It has great acting. It has a great cast. It has a great storyline. The action's incredible. It has a beautiful ending. That ending's so cool.
It's awesome.
Right when he has that. When he looks through that. You know that photo. That
yeah.
that viewer
yeah.
thing.
You want to know?
It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
man, it's so good.
Yeah, it's perfect movie. It really is. And, you know, people forget that, you know, Sean Connery wasn't an Avengers movie. However, it's the wrong Avengers.
I know,
he decides
I
to go bad guy in this, Chuck.
Yeah.
He plays
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes
yes.
in the reboot of the TV series.
And I remember that's when Siskel and Ebert were in high form, very popular. And when they called the movie a bomb. It bombed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it did bomb. It was a bad movie, too. It's not.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of that, it's all pre-internet for the most part. It's all, but when those major critics started to create a cavalcade of bad buzz, it crashed the movie bad. Now, and that movie crashed and burned.
It did, but he would rebound quickly.
Yeah.
After Playing by Heart, which is a nice ensemble romantic movie, not a lot of people saw, but go see that. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
He rebounds getting cast opposite Catherine Zeta-Jones, and we know she likes older men anyway, so it's almost believable that she would be teamed up with Sean Connery. But Entrapment is a real good caper movie, Chuck, and it's really his last big hurrah at the box office. And a lot of people went to see it. It was a big summer release, and it was a real good movie, too, directed by John Amiel.
Yeah, it was well done. It was one of those slick movies. Pretty decent chemistry between the two.
Listen, if you're going to have Catherine Zeta-Jones in tights going around laser beams, it's not a bad thing, Chuck.
No.
It's never a bad thing. To wrap up his career on the big screen, he did a feel-good movie called Finding Forrester, which
I like that movie a lot.
Gus Van Sant directed it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people went to see it, though, Chuck. It did not make a blurb. And then he would make one more movie that just scratches a lot of people's heads. You think The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, based on the comic. You get an all-star cast. Well, not an all-star cast, but a lot of, you know, a legendary
It's called A Misfire.
It's a misfire in the biggest way, because I think they wanted this to be some a series of films.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just never got out of its own way. He plays Alan Quartermain, by the way.
Yeah.
They may as well have gotten Richard Chamberlain to play Alan Quartermain.
Yeah, too bad.
It's too bad that that's really his last movie on the big screen. And that was 17 years ago, Chuck.
Holy smoke.
So if you're not picking Bond, I guess it's The Untouchables.
So he did his last movie at 73.
At 73.
Right around that. Say probably filmed it when he was 72.
It's almost like he called his buddy Gene Hackman and they both said, you know what, let's.
And I think when he retired, he sort of just said, just not doing this again.
No, and I'm sure the scripts.
No, there's really no fanfare. He just said, I don't want to do it.
Well, just like Hackman, you're not getting the scripts that's ever going to get you out of retirement. Why would you bother getting out of retirement? They made enough money.
Well, it's not going to happen now.
No, and, you know, it's too bad that, you know, we can't see more of him. And he actually, just like Hackman, too, you don't even see him in the public eye. Like, these people, they do not pop up in interviews, nothing.
No.
And that's a shame, because Hollywood could use iconic actors popping up every once in a while, because they're certainly few and far between.
And he certainly fed into a breed of actor that you just don't see anymore.
Nope.
His star power, his presence.
Charisma.
You don't see that anymore. Nope. You don't.
No, nope. It's great stuff. All right, well, next week, Carrie Wuer, her career. It'll be an expanded two-hour edition.
We'll do a one full hour on Eight-Legged Freaks. What do you think?
And
let me ask you a question before we leave. Did we mention Beyond the Poseidon Adventure?
You did, actually, when we were talking about Bad Disaster Movie. You did, actually.
I did.
You threw it in there as an aside.
Okay, I think
Carl Malden was actually brought up as well, because he's in Meteor.
Now I know why he got cast as Wilbur in Beyond.
Well, you know, if you think about those back-to-back roles in Meteor and Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, how Carl Malden didn't work for another 20 years in that genre is beyond me. I mean,
what a death scene that was, Wilbur. Hey, you're 2 feet from the surface. Start swimming sideways, Mike.
I got a cramp. He had a cramp.
Why not?
Hey, listen, when you get a cramp, what are you going to do? All right, Chuck, we'll do this all over again next week. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Download one of our archived episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.